This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is the Vic Police Glow Show, exclusive to Joy Podcast, presented by Vic Police LGBTI liaison officers and a range of Joy presenters. Now, here is the Glow Show.
Hi and welcome to The Glow Show. My name's Dee Mason. This is Joy 94.9 and I'm joined in the studio by Gabby Tyack from Victoria Police. Welcome, Gabby.
Hi, Dee.
Great to have you here, lady of little words. Now, you're, of course, a Victoria Police officer.
I'm a Glow.
And a Glow.
Yeah, I've been a Glow full-time for 9 years.
Now, you've brought into the studio with you somebody to chat with us about cyber safety and security. Who have you got?
A really good friend and a long-time Glow, Acting Sergeant Rob Dampier.
Hi, Rob. Are you a full sergeant or are you still acting?
I'm still acting, but...
He's a good actor.
Hope springs eternal.
Oh. I've always wondered that, actually, because I met an acting superintendent the other day. What does acting actually mean?
What it means is technically I'm a senior constable, but I'm doing the job of a sergeant. So the way our organisation works is they give you a chance to perform the role. You get paid at that rank. So I'm acting as a sergeant, but I'm not actually sitting as a permanent sergeant in that position.
No, that
you have to apply for a job if you're trying to change your ranks and move up in the organisation. You have to apply and then win a position, I guess, and that's how you get a promotion. And sometimes if you want to be a sergeant, you also have to pass exams before you go for the job.
Great. Well, good luck with your acting career. Sergeant Rob Dampier is from Melton Police Station in Victoria. He's been a Glow for many, many years and he currently works in the... Do you currently work in the Proactive Policing Unit?
I used to work in the Proactive Policing Unit up until about a month ago. I'm currently doing a little bit of work out at Melton, doing what we call general duties. So I'm back on the road, but for the last 18 months I've been heading up on what they call the OIC, Officer in Charge of the Brimbank Proactive Policing Unit.
Now, I might just mention, Rob, that sitting next to you, of course, is Dani Houseman, who's not a sworn officer, so don't hold it against her. Welcome, Dani.
Thank you.
Now, you will be interested in this because we're going to be having some chats with Rob about his capacity in Victoria Police or his knowledge area in cyberbullying and online safety.
Correct.
Very important.
Do you have some experience in that, Dani? You work largely with the elderly in Victoria.
Yeah, so I'm responsible for the seniors portfolio. Not so much cyberbullying, but one of the issues that affects a lot of older community members and other people broadly is online scams and the like.
Yes.
So still using that sort of electronic internet space.
That's interesting. Rob, how did you develop this expertise in the area of online bullying?
I just think it's a strength of mine in my career that I'm very proactive, very supportive. So the proactive unit is a support unit. We're not mainstream on the road, so we deal largely with community engagement, cultural engagement and victim support. And clearly we're moving towards a cyber age where we all have more of a cyber footprint. And so cyber safety, online bullying, particularly given our current situation with the same-sex marriage survey, is more and more timely. So we are recipients of a large number of requests, mainly through school support groups and the education department. We go out where there's an identified issue or a problem, we'll go out, we'll talk to cohorts of school children and we'll give them some hints what we can do where there's identified offending and just a few hints about keeping themselves safe online.
Now, when I was a child, and it's not that long ago, if you wanted to bully somebody or if somebody were to bully you, they had to come right up to your face and say stuff. At a pinch, they could leave a little note, an abusive note in your locker, or they could call your home with some abuse, but that was always trackable.
And you were able to oftentimes escape them. So you could go home, not answer the phone, and you were safe. But that doesn't happen anymore.
So that means this phenomenon, this bullying, has developed itself in a generation. So I guess the rapid rise of this form of bullying means that it's not policed, not by you, but by the online platforms very well. It hasn't been controlled very well. Mm. So how does the law deal with it? Like, is it a legal issue or is it just a social problem? Is there laws that are being broken?
Well, that depends on the individual situation. There are behaviours which are right across the spectrum. Clearly, the nature of cyber identity is such that most of us carry an iPhone or a device which allows us to access our cyber identity anywhere, in our bedroom, at home, 24/7. The nature also of the identity is that because people are in the security of their own bedroom or their lounge room, they think anything they say or do is anonymous and can't be traced. So sadly, that often encourages people people when it comes to bullying, when it comes to saying things that they think they're anonymous, there's not a problem.
Donald Trump, for example.
We won't go with Donald Trump. We'll move on. But one of the good things about cyber identity is, you know, it encourages robust conversation with like-minded people or others. Where Victoria Police take an interest is where that robust conversation crosses the threshold into criminal offending. There are a couple of situations. There's an offence called use a telecommunications device to stalk or harass. So if you have a series of interactions which cause distress or alarm to a person, then that becomes an applicable offence. So it's a matter of degree. If I say to you, your mother dresses you funny and you've got a bad haircut, I might not think that's necessarily a bad thing. But if for whatever reason your past history means that you find that deeply distressing, then that can be a criminal offence. Clearly, at the end of the spectrum, if we get threats of physical harm, threats to kill, anything like that, those are very, very significant criminal offences, and we will and can act when they are reported.
So it needs to be instigated by the person that it's directed at. You can't just intervene and see something and then act. I have to report that somebody said, my mum dresses me funny, I've got a bad haircut, and I haven't forgotten those words ever.
Well, sadly, the way of the universe is that if we don't have a victim, we don't have a complaint, then we don't have a crime. So the investigative process and the judicial process is such that we need somebody to stand up and say, I have a problem, somebody is doing this to me, I'm prepared to make a statement, we have an investigation, and if the evidence is there, we will then charge and bring a person before the courts.
What kind of charges could be brought against a cyberbully?
As I say, there's use a telecommunications device to stalk or harass. There's an assault, okay? Now, most people outside the legal system don't appreciate that. To be charged with assault, you don't have to physically touch someone. Anything I say or do that causes you distress or causes you to be fearful leaves you liable to the offence of assault. Then there's things like threats to kill, threats to inflict serious injury, racial vilification, the famous 18C that we've heard a lot about. All of those are a range of criminal offences and may be deemed appropriate charges for somebody.
Like jail time, fines, community service?
It's difficult to say without further information as to the background, but definitely with threats to kill, depending on a person's criminal past, that is punishable by custodial sentence.
I've noticed that a lot of the threats to kill or physical violence have been levelled at the community, certainly in terms of this marriage equality debate. Sometimes you'll just be following a thread. I hate to do it, but sometimes you have to because, you know, for my job or whatever, I'm following a thread and somebody will jump in and say, yous are all going to die, we're going to blah, there's going to be a bomb at the blood. You know, they're sort of threats to maim on a large scale, but there's no one human victim or potential victim. So how do we stamp that stuff out?
With threats to kill, they often come out of a domestic violence situation. The perpetrator and the victim are known to each other or are ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend, ex-partners, and often people will resort to Facebook to workshop their differences. Facebook is particularly problematic.
That's a very diplomatic way to say that.
Workshop the differences.
Mm. Relationship violence is a whole realm that is coming into its own, and the organisation appreciates that it's incredibly difficult, incredibly damaging to a lot of people. A lot of people who won't let a relationship go, who one partner has moved on and the second partner refuses to do so. And as I say, sometimes people resort to Facebook. It's further complicated by the fact that the nature of Facebook is that you often share mutual friends, so it encourages people to comment on personal values and different people and what they're up to, and she did this and she did that and he did this, and then all of a sudden it just snowballs and people don't appreciate that they're playing out their relationship in a cyber forum. Mm. It's a bit like a tennis match. I hit the ball to you and you hit it back and then I hit it back a bit harder and then all of a sudden it's war and peace. And we will often get people who come into a station in tears with family members and they've got screenshots of incredibly disturbing stuff. And that's where we, as Victoria Police investigators, and more specifically as a proactive unit, we will step in and take the steps that we need to do.
If we're looking at the marriage equality survey and the comments and things that we've seen online, where you said before there's no single victim, but if someone is making a threat against a community, it's hard for us to follow up because we do need a victim, a particular victim. However, we can look at the individual making that threat.
They're inciting violence.
To see if they're committing an offence. Are they saying that they're going to commit a crime that we could perhaps prevent because we've been given information about that crime? So we might be able to investigate who that person is and speak to them about that, even though we might not be able to prove that they're targeting anyone specifically. So when you're seeing things like that, we do want you to report that to police. Let us know that you've got it there and show us the evidence so that we can follow up and try to identify the person who's posted that.
I really think that there ought to be somewhere that we can, and I know Facebook has its own, you know, report this or block that or whatever. But Rob, you were saying to me earlier that blocking somebody on Facebook is not necessarily the right course of action if they're being abusive toward you.
One of the first bits of advice we give to people is if you encounter somebody who's being unpleasant, then I call it a Facebook holiday. Block them, give yourself a bit of time off social media, go out, enjoy the world. And I usually say to particularly young people, take 30 days, 30 days and just go and have a life. You look at some young people who are so tied to their devices and their cyber profile that they look at horror when you say 30 days without Facebook. If there are significant offences, such as threats to kill or, dare I say, anything of a terrorist nature or anything like that, one thing we must realise is that when you block someone on Facebook, you do actually remove a lot of the capability for investigators to go back in and trace those threats. So if you think it's significant, then don't block. Just come into any police station and report it. The other thing I would suggest is, particularly if we get into the area of offensive photographs, if you're dealing with photographs of underage children or people, do not forward those photos. Do not print them. Do not save them. Do not forward them to anyone. Don't show them to anyone, because that saving, printing, forwarding in itself is an offence.
So if somebody sends me something of that nature and I screen grab it to show to the police, am I in breach of those laws?
Screen grabbing, I wouldn't screen grab. What I'd do is I'd just take your device straight to the local police station. Time is probably of the essence. The sooner we hear about it, the faster we can act. It's sometimes disappointing that we will get, I realise we all have busy lives, but you sometimes get people come into a police station and they will report matters days, sometimes weeks after the fact. And that lag does cause a problem for investigators. Most police stations are open 24/7, so even if it's a little late, come down and see night shift and have a chat to your local friend.
Bring them a donut.
Yep.
Always take donuts if you go into the cops. I have a question for Rob, and this is anecdotal through a friend of mine's child, and her son has been bullied via the internet. She said that they had somebody come and talk at their school, and look, it may well have been you, that one of the greatest concerns with cyberbullying is actually self-harm and indeed suicide amongst the young people. It's not that people are following through on their threats to kill or their threats to hurt or to embarrass, but that the victim takes it upon themselves to take themselves out of the equation through suicide or self-harm.
And that is definitely the worst case scenario. And sadly, it happens all too soon, all too often.
But the perpetrator will say, oh, I never intended for them to kill themselves. But often these threats are saying, why don't you kill yourself? You're no good to any of us.
Well, there's Brodie's Law, which came in a number of years ago because
of that
instance where a woman did take her own life as a result of bullying, and Brodie's Law came about because of that.
Was she a grown woman that took her life, or was it a kid?
I think she was in her early 20s.
She was working, I think, casually in a cafe or something like that, and her boss and one of the other senior employees there.
Oh, in real life bullying or online?
No, in real life bullying drove her to the point where she felt that the best solution was to not be around anywhere anymore.
So if you're a parent currently in Victoria and you feel that your child is going through those kind of issues, is it best to confiscate the device or get them off the computer? What's the best course of action?
Well, there's a couple of points. That the first thing is always be aware what your child is doing online. Put the computer in the main room. Computers in bedrooms, not a good idea. Even phones and iPads in bedrooms, not a good idea. Always where it's visible, where you can see what they're up to, who they're talking to. Even one of the more disturbing realizations is even some of the online gaming where you can talk to other players. The young people don't have the filters to appreciate who they're talking to. They might think they're talking to someone of their own age, but there's some evidence from overseas that even Minecraft Minecraft, unsuitable characters and pedophiles are actually accessing via Minecraft to talk to young people, and they groom them. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to frighten parents that everybody that talks through Minecraft or social media is a pedophile, but you need to be aware that a child of 10, 12, 14 doesn't have the life experience, doesn't have the filters, and doesn't have the understanding that not everybody is trustworthy. And some of these people, these criminal offenders, are very, very skillful and adept at presenting themselves. You know, and a young person might say they like puppies, and they go, "Oh, I love puppies. What sort of a puppy?" And all of a sudden, the young person thinks that they've got a friend, and might not always be what they think they're talking to.
Well, the whole idea, and that was drummed into us as children of stranger danger, is visually to identify a police officer because they're the good guys, and these are strangers and they're the bad guys. That all when you're online is so invisible, right?
I think people think of strangers as people on the street that can physically harm them, and online they don't see that as the same thing, but it really is.
And indeed, if somebody who likes puppies says, "Why don't we meet at the zoo?" then you're not meeting a stranger, you met somebody that you think you know.
Yeah, so I think for parents of younger children, it would be a good idea to have a conversation with them, to talk about stranger danger in the age of online relationships.
Let me ask a question around the room. Dani Houseman, what do you think is the solution, big picture thinking now, to the problem of hidden identities online? Like, what do you think, 10 years down the track, how are we going to fix that? My thought, and this is where civil liberties sometimes have to be given up for what people perceive as their own civil liberty, and their God-given right to anonymity needs to be weighed up against the fact that people are abusing this privilege of being anonymous online. I think you need a license. I know that the big ruckus that came up when they proposed the Australia card and all that stuff, I think that there will be a sub-internet, which is the super web, which will be all registered online users, like registered legally with the internet, and that everybody will have an identifiable password IP address, and that person is responsible for all transmissions going to and from that account.
That would help.
But wouldn't one of the issues still be, and I don't know if I've got the stats exactly or the numbers exactly right, but from my understanding is that we've got what we know as the internet and everything that goes along with that. But then you've also got the dark web, which isn't necessarily nefarious. It's just where a whole lot of other information is. And that's something like 80 or 90% of internet traffic is actually on the dark web, which is used through VPN, so virtual private networks, which you can't trace.
Yep. So I think there'll always be a dark web.
Yeah.
I think there'll even be this level of shitty web that we've got now. I think that what will happen is it will have a curated private internet of people who are law-abiding and nice, and that will become the standard. I think that the next generation of children will be introduced to that. I've made this up in my head, but I think when I was reading about Rob there today, I was thinking, if I were a parent of a 14-year-old boy right now, I'd want him, yes, to have access to all that stuff, but to have curated content that is known to be not offensive.
Yep.
Because and that whoever's talking to him, if I go to the cops, I can say, "Who's that that said that?" And they're responsible for that.
It would be nice, because if that was actually to happen and people used it the way it was meant to be used, we wouldn't have the issue of trolls. Because trolls are a huge problem on the internet. They're often the ones that are being anonymous, getting online, saying whatever they want to someone, making them feel like they should go and harm themselves because they're just constantly at them. It doesn't matter what your opinion might be. There'll be trolls on there with the opposite opinion just to annoy you, just to target you. And so if we could somehow prevent that, that would be great. But at this stage, you can't. So, I mean, when it's people who you don't know who are trolling you and just targeting you, then that's when I think you should just delete them, block them, because there's no use responding to someone who you will never ever change their opinion. You will never ever get them on your side. So there's no use really engaging with them. Just get them out of there, get rid of them.
And there are also some people, I think, who actively troll people for fun, and the more you respond, the more they'll harass you. So if you don't actually respond, they'll go away because you're not fulfilling the need that they have.
And don't read their crap. That's the key.
Stay away from the comment section.
Definitely.
I fear, Rob, that we've asked more questions than we've answered, though we've answered a lot of them, but it does show how deep this issue is, that there's all these questions arising.
Can I just add two final things?
Go on then.
One is build good relationships with your kids, so that they feel safe, that if something bad is happening to them, if they feel somebody's doing something that makes them feel strange, that they can come to you, that you're their friend. The other thing I always say when I do, and I do a lot of bullying presentations, I probably do several each week these days, is secrets. I say to the young people, nobody needs to keep secrets from mum or dad. No matter how foolish you think or that you think you're going to get into trouble, mum and dad or mum and mum or dad and dad only ever want for you to be safe. So you can always go to them with a problem. And if somebody online says, this will be our secret, keep it between us, that's a warning flag.
Bells, yeah.
Okay. So always go to an adult, go to a teacher you like, somebody in your life and say, look, I have a problem. This is happening and it's making you feel strange. And that's what we recommend.
The issues are much the same as they were in the 70s. They're just, it's a whole new level of technology. The issue is still the same. Don't trust and, you know, go to an adult, be honest, and trust the police.
And the technology brings it into our house.
That's
the problem. Brings it so much closer to home and you can't always get away with it.
You can't shut it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all we have time for. Dani Houseman from Victoria Police, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Dee.
Sergeant Rob Adampia from Melton, thanks again.
Always a pleasure.
And, of course, Gabby Tayac, leading senior constable and Glow with Victoria Police. My name's Dee Mason. You've been on the Glow Show podcast on Joy 94.9.
You've been listening to the Vic Police Glow Show, exclusive to Joy Podcast, presented by Vic Police LGBTI liaison officers and a range of Joy presenters. Head to joy.org.au/theglowshow to find more episodes or search Joy 94.9 Glow Show on iTunes. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. Rate and review if you like what you hear.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.